Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Jersey Coastal Live. I'm Andrea Tarr. Well, today we are going to be talking about zombies. I know it's not Halloween, but I think zombies can be anytime, anywhere. And my guest today is filmmaker Chris Eilenstein, who is the writer and director of a movie called The Soulless. And this movie, The Soulless, is about a father and a daughter who have survived a zombie apocalypse that has wiped out most of humanity. So we will definitely hear about the movie and about zombies in general. But first, I just wanted to share a little info with my audience that I learned a little bit about zombies as I was doing a little research for this. And I didn't realize that the word zombie actually first appeared in the Oxford English Dictionary in 1819. But the first time it became part of the English-speaking world was in 1889. There was an article in Harper's Magazine, and the article was called The Country of the Comers Back. And it was written by a journalist who was learning about some local customs in the Caribbean, and he came across a legend of the Cor Cadavera, or the Walking Dead. And the whole idea here, you know, the fear of zombies was very much tied to the practices of voodoo. And the idea was that it was possible, or this was the legend, that it was possible for your soul to be removed and replaced by a god or a sorcerer. And, of course, the main fear was that this would happen after death and that your body would be reanimated, your corpse would be reanimated, and you would turn into some sort of an obedient drone. So very little zombie trivia there. So anyway, Chris, thank you for being with me.
Thank you for having me today.
Oh, really my pleasure. So I think that, you know, you are the expert on all things zombie, so it's going to be fun to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, the first thing I want to ask you is really, how did you get involved in filmmaking?
When I was about 13 years old, I was a very big comic book fan, wanted to be a comic book artist, and I stumbled upon storyboards for some films, and I really got fascinated by the whole process of filmmaking. And then my mother one day traded in a washing machine for a Super 8 film camera, and I've been making movies ever since.
She traded in a washing machine for a Super 8 camera.
For a Super 8 camera, yep.
That's really loving your son.
Yeah, it was
wow.
A fascinating day. It was like immediately got some film and started, blowing up spaceships and all sorts of fun things.
So what
I remember
wrapping a friend in
aluminum foil, made an alien out of them.
So were you right away into the superheroes or space things or aliens? What was your show back when you were 13?
I was very much into a show called Space 1999. Which is kind of where I learned about the filmmaking process and the behind-the-scenes aspect of it and started to learn that there are all these hundreds of people involved with making these shows, from the writers to the directors to the production designers, costume, you know, and it opened up a world of interest for me. And
mm-hmm.
I was a big Star Trek fan at the time, and I would always remember staying up late and sneaking up to watch things like Time Machine and Chiller Theater, yeah. and learned to love comic books and science fiction and the horror genre at an early age.
Well, I can remember as a kid also, not so much as an adult, but as a kid, every Saturday, a double feature at a movie theater where I lived, and they were always, you know, horror movies, The Crawling Eye,
right?
The Angry Red Planet. Oh, my God, I saw everything.
There was so much fun, and you have such vivid memories of them, and they stay with you forever.
Well, the Crawling Eye,
I'm a big film historian and big film fan, and I'm a fan of all genres of film, but there's something very special in my mind about the science fiction and horror and how they stick with you. The ones from your youth stick with you through the rest of your life.
Well,
really,
what were some of your favorite
really
movies as a kid? What did you love as far as
You mentioned Angry Red Planet. I have distinct memories of the spider creature in that and watching that on TV as a child. But I loved the Batman TV series as a child, and some of my favorite movies were some of the Hammer horror films, the Christopher Lee vampire films and so forth that would be shown at my local cinema. And I would see those, and I'd be absolutely terrified, of course, but of course I'd go back the next week to see more of them. So, but
you know,
I do
remember
have
that as
memories
well.
Of the time machine.
Oh, well, the time machine was very scary. I remember,
with
like, as you said, yes, it was very scary to me, and I remember always having a sweater or a coat, no matter what time of year, because you had to cover your head. But yet,
mm-hmm.
I came back every week, because there was something
sure.
very compelling. So, yes, I can relate to that, definitely.
It was fun to be scared. You were never too concerned for your own well-being, but it was fun to kind of have those kind of feelings
scary.
And challenges. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was fun scary, because I knew when I got out
yes.
of the theater that I wouldn't encounter, you know, the crawling eye. It was just strictly in the movies.
No, that's my favorite kind of horror, is the type that you can enjoy and have fun with and don't feel too traumatized by. You'll even see in The Soulless that most of the horror is character-driven and not designed
mm-hmm.
to make you not walk, you know, go sleep at night. So
that's a good thing.
Those are my favorite kind.
So as a kid, when you were making these movies with your Super 8 camera, and I remember those very vividly as well, so
mm-hmm.
anything in particular stand out for you? That did you hang on to anything after all these years?
Well, my first film was called The Reaper, which was about a group of kids chased by the Grim Reaper, and it's grown from there. It's I have a love for the horror and science fiction genres,
mm-hmm.
particularly. But there was always something fun about throwing the blood around and killing off your friends, and making the Monster of the Week type movies, and that's always had a soft spot in my heart, those kind of movies.
And so did you have a lot of friends that you,
It was always easy to find people that wanted to do that kind of thing because it's just so much fun. And then, you know, one film, you'll have two or three people who stick with you to the next one and on to the next one until you have a group of people. And then they get fascinated by films and make their own. And
mm-hmm.
so it's really you just collect fun, creative people through your life, and those are the ones that stick with you. And
so, how did you get involved with the zombies? That sounds like a funny question, but you know what I mean.
Well, one of the films that made me really want to become a filmmaker, made me decide to go to film school, was Dawn of the Dead in 1978,
mm-hmm.
The Romero film. And I've always had a fondness for the genre since then. But recently there have been some articles in science journals. I've been much more in the science fiction type of storytelling, where an article came out about scientists discovering that aging was not a form of decay, but was actually a form of mutation that we go through throughout our life, and
mm-hmm.
that they wanted to find a way to turn off that particular genome so we wouldn't age. And I said, what if I got a scientist who decided to reboot humanity by reshaping its DNA? And so The Soulless is basically the premise of a scientist who feels he's godlike and wants to reboot humanity. And the zombies in our movie aren't necessarily the Walking Dead type zombies, but it's basically humanity set back to its primitive animalistic beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically he turns off all of humanity and then reboots us, and then 98% of us come back as millions of years in the past. But there's a special group, like 1% of
mm-hmm.
of the population, that are called the Soulless. And they've actually, his little reboot didn't work on them. They're actually propelled into the future, and they're evolved beyond what we are right now. And then, of course, there's a small group of people who think they've been unchanged and are relatively similar to what humanity was before
mm-hmm.
the scientist did his job. And that's the premise of The Soulless, is about two people, a father and daughter, who are, as they learn later in the last two movies, that they're called the Soulless. and how they survived the apocalypse, this reboot of humanity.
Now, I'm curious how you decided to go with a father and a daughter.
Well, fatherhood has changed me immensely. I became a father 12 years ago, and and I definitely have that perspective now that I did not have 15, 20 years ago, 30 years ago when I started making movies. And I just wanted to tell a story from that perspective. The film even starts with saying, you know, for Erin, who's my daughter, first thing you see on the screen. So it's basically my ode to fatherhood done through the eyes of somebody who will do anything for his daughter despite basically the apocalypse occurring around them.
Interesting.
He's determined to give her as normal a life as possible.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
The theme of The Soulless is basically that this reboot of humanity is basically 100% lethal to the child population. So humanity does start to recover a little bit in the second and third films. There are no children left. There are no families left. And Nicole and David Peterson, the father and daughter in The Soulless, become very, very special to the rest of the world because they're the only family that anyone knows it still exists.
Okay.
And
okay.
It's, the basic theme of this is loss of child and how it affects everybody in the movie.
Okay. Hmm. One of the things that I was reading about when I was doing my zombie research, because, you know, as I said to you, I didn't really know a lot about it. So I was talking about writers were saying that there was no absolute standard for what a zombie was. So therefore, you know, different filmmakers took the liberties of making their zombies as, you know, to look however they wanted to. So I'm curious how you came to design your zombies.
Well, a zombie is basically anything that died and came back. So when you think about it, anybody with a near-death experience, anybody who was clinically dead for a few minutes and came back, they could be classified as a zombie, and that becomes a very important theme in our movie, actually. But in terms of designing our zombies, I wanted them to be looking relatively human.
And they do.
Not
yeah.
decomposing, not I want them to be with glazed over eyes, like early vision before it became very acute. Their vision is very based, like frogs, on motion and movement around them. Very animalistic behavior. So it's kind of like waking up one day and finding yourself in the middle of the safari with animal, you know, with wild animals around you, and you're trying to survive. Or primitive, you know, waking up one morning and Neanderthal man is occupied the world, which terrifies me actually more than the Walking Dead kind of premise.
That is a pretty scary thing. So your zombies are more like animalistic humans, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Because yeah, I watched the trailer, the teaser, and they weren't as I'll use the word decayed, because you do see that a lot of times in zombie movies. They are really just decaying, whatever they are. So I thought that was interesting that there were so many different ways you could present a zombie, and I guess every one of them is correct. But yours
I wanted. I'm very grounded in science fiction and science, so I wanted a premise that was strong in that respect. I want the Walking Dead premise scientifically does not work, but a reboot of humanity where basically our intellect and years of evolution mentally is taken away from us and we're just kind of put back on the planet as a primitive no better or worse than any animal on the planet, and then struggling to survive does have its basis in science, and that's the premise I went with for the movie.
Now, I had also read that the movie The Soulless, you're hoping that this will be just a part one of a multi-part series. So what are you hoping to do?
Kind of a three-year series story arc a 36-episode TV series, and these three films I've made. The first part is called Z-Day, the second part Sanctuary, and the third is called Revelations, would kind of constitute the first season of a TV series.
Okay.
And that's what we've shot over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to put it all together and present it to a network and go from there.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Very cool. So we could be watching this on TV, on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Well, what I'm thinking of is, you know, this is going to be me saying, this is to kind of give you an idea of the show. Now give me a lot of money and let's redo it. You know, that's kind of the the idea.
That's a good idea.
Yep.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your cast. You've got some interesting people.
I was very fortunate to have a lot of good contacts and have met people on previous projects. I kind of don't go ahead with things unless I know I've got a really solid acting base, because I think that's the most important thing you can have. And I met a young lady named Kaylin I was very impressed with, and she just blew me away making this movie as the young Nicole. And Jason Probst, Jason Probst, who plays the father in all three films, marvelous actor, local actor, recommended to me by somebody. I'd worked on another film with him briefly, and he worked out marvelously. And then Jennifer Teska, who plays Nicole at age 24 in the last two films, tremendous actress from New York City that I've worked with before, and has a marvelous physical resemblance to Kaylin. So the two the two Nicoles really do reflect each other visually, and there's even a transition at the end of the first film from the 12-year-old to the 24-year-old Nicole, and everybody. You can hear them gasp a little bit because it's really believable, the transition between the two. Yeah. So I've really lucked out with the cast. The scientists, Edward X. Young and Michael Chartier play, Edward X. Young plays Dr. Cooper, the man who kind of reboots humanity. He's a local actor who, he's starred in about 60 horror films, just a marvelous actor. And Michael Chartier plays Dr. Riker, who's the head of Genetitech, and he's the scientist who expected to release this cure-all to the world where he would solve all of humanity's ills by reshaping DNA in a positive manner, but instead it gets corrupted by Dr. Cooper, who says humanity's only chance is to reboot. He basically says there's 8 billion of us, we're all capable of killing each other, we all have different beliefs, we know what's going to happen, which is annihilation. So I'm going to save humanity by giving it a new beginning.
We're just starting.
It kind of feels like he's God, you know, setting the great flood into motion. So that's the premise of the movie. I've just got a marvelous cast. A lot of local actors that I've worked with before. Some people from local independent horror films have filled roles, and, Joe Periscond and Genevieve Rossi, and just a number of people that you'll see in local horror independent films that have all contributed great work.
Well, we have to mention Cal Swartz, because I'm thinking this might have been his first horror movie. He's certainly
Cal plays Cal. He plays himself.
Which I
love. And he's interviewing Dr. Riker, and and then he gets eaten by a bunch of kids who attack him. You know, it's all in the film, you know.
Poor Cal.
It's one of those Night of Living Dead things where the reporter gets wrong place at the wrong time. You know, dies trying to inform his public on what's going on. But, yeah, Cal was great. He was there on the very first day of filming.
And let's see, a few weeks ago I was interviewing Dale Licata, the musician, and she said something to me. She had been in a movie, she was acting in a movie and she loved it. And I said, really, what movie? And she said, The Soulless. who isn't in your movie? I thought that was great.
I don't know. I think it's probably easier to list who's not in the film than who is. But, Dale plays Survivor. of the encampment in the second and third film. She gets to sing a song in that, and she plays a zombie in the first film. And probably everybody's played some sort of background, panicked, stricken citizen or zombie at some point in the film.
Well, you do have a lot of people in your movie. There's a lot of...
Yes.
Yeah, big cast. That's kind of cool.
My last count was we had 236 people who've been in the film in some capacity. It's a big project. Big project.
It is a big project. A lot bigger than you thought when you were 13, right?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
When you're trying to simulate the end of the world and everybody running in a panic, we did have a day where we had 120 different people show up throughout the day. And at most we had 85 at one time, and I took advantage of that, had them run around every corner of Second Avenue, Long Branch, as possible. And we really do have a sense of a little bit of an epic nature to the film, whereas our budget would not have allowed that originally. And that comes from enthusiasm and people just wanting to be involved.
I think that's fabulous. So obviously you shot it locally.
There's an area of Long Branch which was supposed to be demolished 12 years ago, about a five-block radius of around 2nd Avenue and Broadway, that we had access to, and it really has a disintegrated, post-apocalyptic look to it and gives the film a major production value that, you know, sometimes people spend millions of dollars in Yugoslavia to create. So we had it right here in Long Branch.
At the Jersey Shore, we had a post-apocalyptic neighborhood. I mean, I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but how lucky for you. That's pretty wild.
Well, about 2 months into shooting, Hurricane Sandy came, and it added a lot of possibilities, too, for us to give that kind of look.
Yeah, I would think so. Oh, my God. Yeah. Now,
we were also offered
challenges?
I'm sorry.
What were some of the big challenges, that you faced in putting this movie together?
The main challenge is telling a story this large with a limited budget and, shooting every other weekend, basically, and keeping it coherent.
Okay.
It wasn't something where I said, okay, I've got you all under budget and we're going to do this in 20 days kind of thing. You know, it was, we ended up with 70 shooting days total over 2.5 years' time.
Two and a half years.
To do the three movies. And it was really a matter of keeping my possibilities open, knowing what I had available to me, and saying each week, well, I can tell this part of the story with what I have available, and doing that. And basically just filling in the puzzle pieces that way. That was the biggest challenge, is keeping it going for the amount of time we needed to finish the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. I
kept
people interested. I never gave a full script. I would keep people interested by giving them about a week's notice on something so they'd be really excited the next day.
Okay.
You didn't want people sitting with a script for a year waiting. That would have taken the energy away.
Did you make a lot of changes to the script from the beginning to how it actually wound up when you shot it?
Not in terms of the story, but ideas would come up or things, the environment would give you ideas. I shot it very much the way Romero did Dawn of the Dead, where he shot in a mall, and he would just see things around him, and possibilities would come up that helped him tell the story that he had, and he would do it that way. And I decided to go that route with this film, which really, really helped. I mean, the film looks very expensive compared to what we spent on it.
When are we going to be able to see it, or are we going to have to wait for the Sci-Fi Channel?
Well, I've sent it off to my composer, the first part, and I expect to have a premiere for cast and crew in May of the finished version. That's with digital effects, music, and everything. We had a kind of a cast and crew showing of a rough cut, which was almost 25 minutes longer than the film that's going to be shown in May. It had everything in it. And it was kind of a wrap party slash cast and crew showing last May. So lot of major changes in the year since then. And then parts two and three I expect to be done by the end of this year.
Okay. Very good.
And I have some other projects coming up that we're going to be working on in the meantime also.
Tell me what's coming up.
I have a kind of a Jersey folklore horror film called Shadows of the Forest, which
okay.
I'll only describe as E.T. meets the Jersey Devil, with being done at the end of the next fall and winter. Started to get the cast together for that, and I'm very excited about that project. I have another film called Dark Girl, which I'm writing for another director as a kind of vehicle for an actress, and it's not finalized yet, so I'm not going to name names for it. But that's basically a dark psychological drama about a teenage girl who thinks she's a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
And another film called Victim 17, which is basically a kind of found footage film about a group of 14 filmmakers in a filmmaking competition, and they've all been entrapped by a demonic cult and forced to film overnight what's going on as they're one by one hunted down. So that's the premise of that film. So it's basically Blair Witch Project times 14.
Times 14.
That's how I would describe it. But that's going to keep us busy for the next year. And then hopefully then the Solus will be well developed and ready to present for a network to pick up.
Now, you had also
those are my ambitions for the next year and a half.
Oh, is that all? Right. You had also done a movie called MacGuffin, which I know had Bob Cleary in it, which was a comedy.
Right. Bob and Stephen Hersicorn wrote MacGuffin,
mm-hmm.
asked me to direct it. It was a Hitchcock spoof, which
okay.
we had three people searching for a valuable diamond ring and encountering all sorts of villains and situations that are reminiscent of classic scenes from Hitchcock movies. And it's a very funny comedy. I always joke it's a comedy that will leave you in hitches. So it's kind of a Hitchcock spoof. And if you're a fan of his films or just a fan of films in general, it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to finish putting that together in the next few months.
All right. Now, speaking of Hitchcock, he always made
mm-hmm.
a little cameo appearance in his movies. So, Chris, are you ever in your movies?
I've been asked by a lot of people in college and other films to act because I guess they thought I was good, but I try not to get in front of the camera myself. I'm much more comfortable behind.
Behind
but,
the camera.
I don't
okay.
think I really have a cameo in the Solus. I'll have to arrange something. I did get my
mm-hmm.
daughter in it though. Her photograph shows up. So.
Okay, well that's one family member. Yeah, but I always
mm-hmm.
think it's a cool thing to be in, you know, just have a little piece in your own movie. I think that's kind of cool.
I might have to go out and film some footage of somebody, gnawing on my arm or something. That could be my cameo.
There you go. Now, actually, our time is closing in. I just want to tell my audience, but
mm-hmm.
we are going to stay on the line a little bit longer because I have a couple more things that I definitely want to ask Chris about. And I know that it's going to cut off after 30 minutes if you're listening live, but you can always pick it up on the archive. So
then we have a website, the Solus Movie at Weebly.com, and we have a Facebook page for the Solus.
Well,
people
on my blog
check in
entry,
more on that?
Yes, on my blog entry, I'll just let everyone know, I will put links to all of the, so you can watch the trailer
great.
And links on Facebook, so you don't have to worry about memorizing everything. I'll put everything out there for people to look at. I'll take care of all of that. So one of the big
great.
Things
thank
that
you.
I did want to, yeah, that I really wanted to ask you about, my own curiosity, because, you know, there is a whole zombie thing about, I sent you a copy of this quote. It's from the Book of the Dead, The Complete History of Zombie Cinema.
Right.
And what I found really interesting, and obviously there's not a lot of people that this would be something I could ever ask, but you're the ideal person to talk to. So the author mm-hmm. says that the whole idea about the zombie is that it's a very flexible monster, he calls it. It's very good at reflecting the horror of and the anxieties and the fears of the audience that's watching at the time. And that zombies have really evolved over time, reflecting different fears in different eras in many different ways. So, you know, of course, they have their originations in voodoo and Haiti and that sort of thing. But what's your
right.
thought about that, that the zombies have a way of reflecting what fears we have in
I think everybody can either put themselves in place of that zombie or somebody they know. And I think the fear of the unknown of what happens after we pass away
mm-hmm.
is kind of shattered by the idea of coming back, the body coming back without the mind or the soul inside. So it's kind of fascinating, even to somebody who's not into horror films. It does have to have a sense of wonder for everybody in that aspect. There's one scene in The Soulless, which is my favorite, where one of the main characters comes back after passing away. And,
mm-hmm.
It's obvious she's not the same as she was before. And yet the person looking at her who's befriended her has to kind of deal with that realization do what's, needed after that. And I think we can all identify with that. It's hard enough to deal with the loss of somebody, but then to have that person sit up and stare at you, but you're still trying to differentiate that they're gone, but they're still there, is an absolutely kind of terrifying thing to deal with. Because there's also that hope of, are they coming back? Are they the same?
Mm-hmm.
But also that realization that they're not. And I think that's always going to be compelling to people.
I thought it was also interesting when it talked about, zombies being reflective of the horrors of the times. And again, you could say this better than I can, but during
mm-hmm.
World War II, there were zombie movies that had to do with Nazis. And, just
sure.
every horror that of humanity was somehow got reflected in a movie about zombies. And since I've not really seen many or at all, I can't
there
really imagine
some
that.
There are recent
but,
ones, yep.
Mm-hmm.
There are some recent ones that involve Nazis, too, but I've always been one of those that have problems with Nazis being presented in comic book manner because of how horrendous a part of history it was. I just think that when there's that much in the world, it's kind of a way to cope with it, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
When war films are never really popular while there's a real war going on. But there are ways of dealing with those tensions and so forth while the war is going on. I think maybe that's why it was so popular. I mean, horror films and science fiction films always have these kind of waves of popularity that are usually 25, 30 years apart. And
mm-hmm.
I think right now not having a space program has really made us want to explore space a little more. And I think that's why science fiction has such a strong grip on people right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we're in these wars, but they're so cold, they're so calculated, they're fought with drones and lasers and so forth, is possibly why the Walking Dead genre is so popular, too. It's kind of filling in a kind of emotional gap that we all have with things.
Well, it's confronting death in a very strange way, in that
yeah.
zombie way. When you became a fan of this, of I'll say everything zombie, did you kind of research and really get to know about the origins of the zombies and what's the best way to incorporate it realistically into your movies?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I wanted to. The tagline for the film is, forget everything you know about
yes.
the living dead. The rules have changed.
Yes.
The I really wanted a major twist on the whole genre while
mm-hmm.
still keeping it familiar to people. I really consider The Soulless to be a science fiction story and a drama about a father and daughter, but it's got a very George Romero framework to it. So you're giving people one portrait, and they're going to find out that they're going to be looking at it in a whole new way afterwards. I really want everybody by the end of the soulless to go and find their child and give them a big hug. You know, it's really a life-affirming type of story.
One of the things that I had read you were describing, I think was in another interview, that you gave your characters very strong family values because you felt that that was something that's missing from today.
Yes.
So here you
definitely
have this father and daughter.
Well, maybe I have a view in some ways that our family situations have become kind of zombie-like and distant and, kids being raised by the TV set and their video games rather than by their parents. And, some of this behavior like school shootings and so forth, I think that's kind of zombie-like behavior. Those are kids that have been desensitized and zombified in some ways to thinking other people are not human beings. And I think a lot of that comes from how they're raised and feeling distant and dehumanized. And I think we need to get back to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like that you did that. I like that that there is a family element. I like the father and the daughter idea, that they obviously get to know each other in ways that most father and daughters would never experience. And even though it's a movie,
right,
I hope people can pull something from that, you know, take it to heart. I like that. I really do.
Well, most good movies or science fiction and horror films and just good films in general should make you look at things differently when you're done with them. If you're the exact same person you were when a movie started as you were at the end, I don't really think it was worth watching it. Different perspectives and not taking things for granted is important, and yet we do. And sometimes it's important to be reminded of the things that are important.
Well, a good movie, I guess, takes you out of where you are now, your comfort zone, and reminds you that not everyone has it so easy. So even
right,
a zombie movie can do that.
Sure.
And, you know, you mentioned Romero, and something that I found really interesting about him, he's from The Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
And I had read that in his movie, his zombie extras actually ate animal entrails because he wanted to make it ultra-realistic.
He did that in Night of the Living Dead, yes.
Wow.
You know, part of that was the low-budget nature of it. you can go out to the local butcher and ask for scraps, you know. It all added to the demeanor of it. I mean, I've got a number of people that played zombies in the film, and they would bring their own props and so forth and get into it. But I generally didn't have anything realistic or smelly here. You know, it was all pretend. But
your makeup artist was busy.
Yes. Yeah, they had a lot of fun. And I allowed them to be very creative, and as long as it fit in with the premise of the film in terms of the way things look, people create their own. I don't even like calling them zombies myself, but their own characters and creations.
Well, of course, we have.
It was a great creative environment.
I would say that's about as creative as it could possibly be to be in a zombie film. And, of course, it makes me think of our zombie walk that we have here in Asbury Park. And, again, zombies can look very different. Everyone has their own idea of a zombie. And so I remember being at the zombie walk, and, every zombie is kind of has a different look. Obviously, some are much more ghoulish and decayed than others. But that's kind of an interesting.
I remember 3 years ago recruiting quite a number of people each year at the Zombie Walk. But 3 years ago, I remember starting to hand out information about the soulless and got 4 or 5 of my key members from that. And some of the people who organized the Zombie Walk have been involved in a major capacity. So,
That doesn't surprise
they love,
me.
They love the genre. You know,
so other
some
than
of them
zombies,
seem like they have a... Yeah.
Other than zombies, what else? What other kinds of films can you see yourself getting involved in?
I've developed a kind of a children's science fiction series involving time travel and dinosaurs and all sorts of fun things. It's very much in the Doctor Who type of spirit. I have a passion for that story. So I would say science fiction is basically where would be the starting point for my stories, but I'm a big fan of giving it the horror taste. So some of the scarier Doctor Who episodes, I would say, are amongst my my favorite things. Right now it seems like with the budget I have and the people available and some of the stories that have been coming to mind, I would say I'm leaning towards the towards the horror elements in terms
mm-hmm.
of future projects. But my dream would be to produce a really good family-oriented science fiction series. That would be my passion down the road. You know, so
well,
if Sci-Fi Network wants to give me a couple million an episode, I'll be very happy.
Of course.
You guys something that the whole family could sit down and watch.
Something to look forward to.
Yes.
Definitely.
Well,
Chris, I really appreciate you being with me today. I really enjoyed talking to you about zombies. I learned several things.
Thank you. Anytime.
Not only from you, but in researching about zombies, I must admit to a whole new appreciation for the genre. And I do look forward
mm-hmm.
to seeing The Solus, maybe at your premiere. And I'll remind my listeners.
I cannot wait to show it to you.
I can't wait to see it. I'm going to remind everyone that as soon as we're done, within about 30 minutes, we'll put up a blog, and there'll be all sorts of links so you can check out Chris's projects and see what's going on. So can 30 minutes change your life? Maybe. So keep listening to Jersey Coastal Live. I'm Andrea Tarr. I want to say thank you to my guest today, filmmaker Chris Eilenstein.
Thank you, Andrea.
From The Solus. So thanks, everyone, for hanging on with us. And, Chris, can't wait to see The Solus. Take care.
You take
Bye,
care.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.